Before I begin my talk, I'll tell a secret about our extraordinary musicians, because Kelly said this today, and almost every one of my friends that has ever been here has always said that when they hear or get to sing with these musicians, they go, oh, this is different. Every single person has always said that, oh, this is something else. So Tom Walsh, Jerry Watts, and the astonishing John Gillison. Fun. Go in the Wayback Machine for a light bulb joke. How many psychotherapists does it take to change a light bulb? How many? Glad you asked. Only one, but the bulb really has to want to change. Right? Change is what's up. Reverend Cynthia addressed that in her treatment today, and Brian addressed that in his treatment, and it happens to be pretty much where we are in this exploration of this fantastic book called Three Simple Steps. Simple but not easy. The first step of creating the life of your heart's desire, of your fulfillment, comes with controlling one's consciousness. The second step is how to create great ideas. And the third step is about executing those ideas, bringing them into fruition. Simple and profound steps. It all is, however, a matter of taking responsibility for our own lives. The great thing that I learned here when I first heard Dr. Walker speak was that indeed there is no God outside of ourselves that wishes anything for me, really, but that I am a perfect expression of life, and life's way will have its way with me. That if I am willing and not resistant to it, I can come to a full flowering or to full fruition and give of my bounty to the world. And that was a great relief when I learned that. The thing that makes religious science a practice is becoming ever more aware on a daily, hourly, minute-by-minute basis of the ways I resist life and what the real content of my consciousness is. Where it came from is not necessarily that important. Sometimes it is good to know where we inherit ideas from. The author, Trevor Blake, talks about, in this section I wanted to comment on, about his grandfather and his father, who had both, in their later years, devolved into meager circumstances. And he realized that his father had unconsciously recreated his own father's experience. And so many of us can recreate the experience that subconsciously, unconsciously, unknowingly, but the active dynamic in our psyche is one of expecting things to either not work out, that we still might believe that the world is against us, or that we do not deserve to have a certain experience, or my grandmother had this, and my mother has this, and therefore I will inherit this. These are deep beliefs, and they are only ideas, and they can be changed, but we must be willing to change. We have a lot of expectations about the way things ought to be as well. Where they come from, I'm not sure. But they burden us. They slow us down. I remember, you all know Edward Brown, Reverend Edward Brown, yes? So I remember Edward Brown said, you can come in the theater here, Edward, if you're standing out there in the lobby, because I'm talking about you. He said, if I ever see drums on that stage, I'm out of here. I'm not exaggerating, am I, Edward?
No, that's true.
You said that. That's the truth. And I would think, why? What's up with that? Who knows? Who knows? But are you okay with what goes on now?
Love it.
Okay, that's the right answer. We have all these secret rules we make up about things have to be a certain way or else. I'm out of here. Edward, in his infinite wisdom, and really, I'm not being facetious, because he is actively practicing the science of mind, has learned to keep his knees slightly bent and to go over the bumpy patches and to keep going in the direction, to go with things that really do favor life. That's how he is. That's why he's still so successful as an individual and why he values this ministry, because it helps him stay in his practice. Now, the past surely does have effects on us. The home culture that we're raised in has an effect on us. The early religious upbringing, if we had that kind of influence in our life, that has an effect on us. The information that comes all the time, every minute of the day at us has an effect. But we get to choose, first thing, we get to choose what we give value to. In the creation myth in the Garden of Eden, when Yahweh says to Adam, the thinking nature of man, that you get to name the animals, we are told by inference that one of the things you get to do is to name the things in your life, and you get to call them good or bad. The thing is, the more things you call bad, the badder your life is. And the more things you call good, the gooder your life is. See, that's not in the creation story. That you have to learn for yourself. You have that authority and you have that power. And it's really, really important what you allow into your mind and what you might even subconsciously label bad, unacceptable. Because as soon as you label it something, you know what? You own it forever. It becomes content of your consciousness. Forever. Unless you're interested in making a change. At some point we look at our lives and we think, this may not be working so well for me. I really would like life to be different. Now, one of the great things, and why I'm appreciating this book, Three Simple Steps, is because it does indeed take advantage of contemporary thought, psychology, and science. And it tells us things that were not available when the Science of Mind was written. And it also counters some information that we have largely grown up with, like by the time you're 5 years old, your brain is hardwired for a certain expectation of life. And for many decades, that has been conventional scientific psychological wisdom, that if it, once it's in there, the pattern is set. Now we know it can be changed. Now, religious science is based on that understanding. So if you want some science to back up what you've always known, if that makes you feel good, great, feel gooder about it. But the brain indeed can be rewired. That's difficult to say. It can be. So whatever has happened in your life can be overridden. Two things that have to happen, though. You have to want to change, and you have to dedicate yourself to it. That's one and one A. The second thing is you have to be willing to get rid of it. I mean, really willing to stop it, whatever it is. Usually, it's our story. Who am I without my story? Our story is the thing that we usually default into. It's our chronic excuse about why things are the way they are. You know, when you are in a group of people, and I have found this consistently true for all the time that I have been working at this science of mind, is that we all have so much to talk about when we're complaining. But when things are great, you don't have a lot of stories to tell. You go, "How are things?" You go, "Great." You know, if you take the other road, how bad are is it? Oh, let me tell you how bad things are. And we've been through that the last couple of weeks. The list is endless about all the ways you're working my last nerve and what they're doing to me and who's in my... When things are great, they're great. It's okay. Am I working on stuff? Yeah, I'm working on stuff. How you doing? Good. Okay. Nice seeing you. Have a cup of coffee at some time. It doesn't make for great conversation. It doesn't make for great conversation. But, you know, when we begin to really choose ourselves and to really take seriously that what I label and what I react to is creating my life, even today, right now, right this minute, my future experience is being created by what I think about, what's going on. When we realize that, the natural expansion of that basic idea also is that, you know, your mind, your life is your business. And the process is artful. It is artistic and it is creative. And that at long last, you are in business for yourself. Always. We are about the business of being ourselves. Effectively, graciously, and creatively in this world. And anything that does not serve that enterprise, if you want to change, must go. Everything must go. Very interesting, another interesting piece in the chapter I read where the writer talks about Napoleon Hill, who wrote the book Think and Grow Rich, which is so influential in the American popular culture and self-development. It was one of the things that really began the self-help genre. And, you know, he shines some interesting and important light on Napoleon Hill, someone who wanted to know how all the really, really, really rich guys got really, really rich. Well, there's a lot of tremendous and good information, and frankly also there's an awful lot that's borrowed from early New Thought literature. But one thing this writer says is that Napoleon Hill, bless his heart, was sort of a chronic failure throughout his whole life. And that he was rescued a couple of times by other people. Even the fact that he did not have appropriate copyright, it says in this book, on Think and Grow Rich, and then Clement Stone bought the rights back for him and gave it to him, and therefore he wound up being financially successful. But even with that book, he was a chronic failure in life. As a example, as a leader, it is very important, I believe, as we are beginning the process or continuing the process about being in business for ourselves, to pick ideas and to pick examples of people who you think have been truly successful and meaningful in life. Do you all have something to write with? If not, do we have some pencils here in the house? Wendy. Wendy Weris has pencils. Because I want you to write down a couple of things. Here, if someone needs something to write with, please raise your hand. And Wendy will come about. You'll need something to write on. No doubt your bulletin is good. In self-help world, there is a culture, I'm going to be a bad guy. I'll admit it. There's sort of a culture of falling in love with teachers who make a lot of money telling people they can be successful, but haven't really proven anything. And it's sort of a, it can be a spiritual Ponzi scheme. If somebody that you were, you know, really, really admiring only makes money telling you, you can do it, you can do it, you can do it, and there are tens of thousands of people that come through these programs and they really don't wind up achieving that much, be alert to that. But there are people, no doubt, who really have achieved something in life. And one of the things that was edited out of Think and Grow Rich that Trevor Blake invites us to do is, as you set yourself up to be in business for yourself, you want to have a board of directors that's your own. So I'd invite you right now to write down the names of three people that you would like to be on the board of directors of You, Inc. It would be easy for me to say Dr. King doesn't count and Oprah doesn't count, because I'd like you to imagine some other people. But right this minute, think of three people who have succeeded in a way that you want to succeed in life. Three people that really have something to offer. Now, I had previously done this a long time ago, and I have their pictures at home. And I continue to check in with them, and they happen to not be anybody that you would know. But they're people who succeeded in life at what they determined their task was in a variety of disciplines, according to their own light. Write down at least three people, no more than six. Because it's very important to be in touch, you know, if there's one mind, right? And there's no such thing as time. Spiritual practices, you can be in some kind of mental communication, not in a spiritualist way, but some kind of dialogue with anybody. When you have a problem in your life, you can throw it to your board of directors and say, what would you do? Remember Hillary Clinton got in trouble for doing that when someone found out she was doing that? You remember that story? When she was first lady? To Jean Houston, that's right. Yeah. Apparently, Mrs. Clinton used to have kind of conversation with Eleanor Roosevelt. And somebody told. And that was a bad thing. The heck with that. She'd be a good person on your board of directors. There's somebody who really succeeded in a variety of ways. So this is kind of important. And why is it kind of important? It's important because if you did not see those particular people, if you didn't recognize their achievement, you wouldn't have the same qualities that they had. And if you do see the qualities that they have, that means you have those qualities too. And you belong at the same table with them. This is really real. And that's why it's an exercise that is worth doing. Who is it that chose a life and really created something and gave something special to the world? Who is it for you? I would hope that of the 100-some-odd people that are here, that we would have 500 different people, you know? that there would be a variety of different people. Because one of the things that I practice when I pretend I'm sitting at a board meeting with these folks myself, if I have the nerve to complain, I know that they're going to get up and walk out. You're wasting my time. If you've got an excuse, you're wasting my time. Tell me what you want to accomplish. And there is some example in other people's lives that can encourage me and inform me in what I want to accomplish. Most of the time, the story that we tell is what's not working, or why I can't, or what the limitation is. Forget about the problems. Forget about it. Tell me what you seek to experience. This is very simple, yes? And it's the practice of a lifetime. You know, to tee yourself up to being in business for yourself and to really take charge of your own life requires mental discipline, yes. It requires focus. It requires monitoring your thoughts. All these things that we've been speaking about either for the last couple of weeks or the last couple of decades. But if you want it, you can do it. We have to identify, though, what needs to go as well. And that's one of the other pieces that's really, really important. If you want to be successful, are you willing to pay the price for what that success looks like? And if we're in a negative position of any kind, are you willing to let go of that right now and not give yourself an out anymore? You got to make a choice. Debt is a large issue in America. Credit card debt in particular is a large issue. If any of us Americans have an enormous amount of credit card debt, are you willing to cut your credit cards in half and stop debting? And the answer for 99.9% of us is no. What if I need it in the future? You don't get it. What choice are you willing to make right now? Are you willing to not debt anymore? And for most of us in America, the answer is, I guess not, no. I guess not, no. You know, it's always a choice. It's always a choice. Or if it's debt, or if it's that, you know, everyone at my job is awful. Everyone? Everyone in your industry is awful? Could it be you? Every one of my relationships has ended in disaster in the same way. Really? All these different people, and it always, isn't that convenient? That it always ends to get to end the way subconsciously you need it to end, so you can prove that life is against you. Big fundamental choice that needs to be made in your life. Now that you know that there is no God out to get you, and that life, frankly, is a miracle and abundant by nature, what is our story? We live in a trance of scarcity because it gives us a good excuse. I am no longer interested in excuses in my life. And I continue to work religious science as a daily practice to stay focused on what it is I want, what it is I want, what it is I want. And I know that most of you think I'm a fully realized spiritual being. I know that. And yet when I was at Asilomar last week, I sought out someone who I really, really admire and, you know, asked for treatment. And four times this minister said to me, you're telling me what you don't want. Start again. Four times. You know, I'm working my program. That's all I can tell you. As best I can, and in the big picture, I have had miraculous events because I have a commitment to keep going. Choose your board of directors. Go on Google. Print out little pictures of them. Put them wherever you need to put them. And it's not a simple matter of what would Jesus do. You know, I don't know. Please pick somebody real, for crying out loud. I didn't mean Jesus wasn't real. I mean, pick somebody where you really know what the achievement was and what price they paid to achieve that. And find yourself in a lively conversation about moving forward into the life that you want. If you have to say four times, you're telling me what you don't want, start again, then so be it. I know it's worth it, and it's worth it for you too. God bless, friends.